Are we going?
Into podcast.
Potter Who Cast.
But how's it called?
Phyllis Manger at your service.
Don't forget me.
Sarah, did you forget me?
Oh, let's go, that's class!
There is no such thing as...
Doctor Who, Series 5, Episodes 8 and 9. The Hungry Earth and Cold Blood.
Oh, that's my stomach rumbling. Oh, I'm so cold. I need to have some earth blood. I don't know.
You abandoned that one so quickly.
Mm-hmm. For the benefit of people, I'm waiting for a Steam Deck to boot back into menu, and it seems to be stuck on the menu, which is not good. Because that means it's not working. That's great.
Yeah.
That's very expensive for the tech.
In a way, that Steam Deck has a lot to do with today's episode, because you are kind of waiting for a big thing, and when it happens, you're kind of going to go, the waiting was better than the actual thing.
It's currently trying to install updates, and hopefully that won't drag me down. It just restarts. Hungry Earth and Cold Blood. I didn't know them. Broadcast on the 22nd, 29th of May, 2010. So, May 22nd, let's get on the back, Shrek Forever After, still number one. Or
good.
Or is... I'm trying to figure... You know what? We did. I'm trying to figure out, because we're doing this out of order, I'm trying to figure out if we already did that one.
But I think we did that.
But I can't remember whether that's before. It doesn't matter. The 29th is something.
Let's just, to be safe and for the edit, let's just say Shrek's on the box office and he's having a ball.
Mm-hmm. The swamp is popping off. Majorly. Sorry, I went to press turn off and I accidentally hit cancel instead of. Yeah, there we go.
It's fine. You don't need to apologize to me for that. No,
it's just I'm getting antsy now. But on the 29th, there was something new. Okay? So it's a sequel to I'd call it a long-running franchise, but it's a long-running franchise in different media. This is a sequel to a film based on a television program. And it's kind of famous for its stars more than anything, and it also features someone who we will talk about in about like 5 years, because an actor is in both. I think I'm gonna say they, because I don't want to get away. I think they are in this one, but they're in the first one definitely, and they're in the TV show that this is based on. But they're not in the latest series of the TV show that this is based on. And it's a movie. It's like a comedy, kind of rom-com-y kind of... I don't know if it's a rom-com, but it's like a comedy. It's... I don't know who directs it, but it's got four famous people as the leads.
It's the A-Team, right?
No. It's...
It can't be Star Trek.
It's not Star Trek. It's the show it's based on. Is technically it's on the air again, but it's called something else, and it's missing one of its famous four leads, because the lead who's missing hates the like de facto lead on the TV show.
And Sex in the City 2, yes.
Mm-hmm. Lawrence of Malavia, I think Kim Cattrall says on that movie. That's number one. Written by, I'm seeing here, Christopher Chibnall?
He wrote Sex in the City 2?
He did.
You mean the episode?
he wrote that too. This is the first thing he's written since Exit Wounds. Don't know if you remember Exit Wounds.
I remember Exit Wounds. That was a good episode of Torchwood Season 2.
Well, you'll be happy to know that this is directed by Ashley Wei, whose last work was Exit Wounds as well.
No way.
Yeah, this is like his only, I think this might be his only, it's only like who that he does. He did the Tardisodes in series 2, and then he does this, and then he does, I think, some Sarah Jane stuff, and then he's kind of, he's in the wind. Sorry, I just noticed how long the sentence I just say is. Okay, so in a sentence, humanoid lizards from the dawn of time fight back against a Welsh mining project in the far-off year of 2020, igniting the war between Homo sapiens and Homo reptilia, which results in Rory dying and being absorbed in one of those cracks in the space and time, which causes Amy to forget he existed, while also allowing the Doctor to reach into the crack and take out a piece of wood, which turns out to be a piece of the TARDIS.
Very interesting how this episode that takes place in 2020 is very isolated, some might say.
Mm-hmm.
What do Chris know?
Chris knew something.
He was like, something's going to happen in 2020 that's going to fuck up all my plans so bad.
It's going to
throw a massive fucking wrench in everything and just completely destroy my plans.
And it's called Revolution of the Daleks. That's 2021, I guess. I don't know. This one... There's a lot to say about this one. But kind of my overriding feeling is that, like, I don't want to say boring story, but it's a very kind of, you know, cut and dry, cookie cutter kind of template of a story, which has moments where it kind of moves away. I think the second part is, for the most part, better than the first part, but I think the first part has kind of a better handle on what it's trying to do, whereas I think the second part kind of, I think, starts, I guess, not really it trips over itself to get to the ending, and there's bits of the ending where I'm really like, I don't understand why this is happening, and we'll get to it, but like, I don't know, what do you think? Because it's a story that I'm mixed on, I think, but mixed on for like different reasons.
I think the first part of this is fantastic. I think the first part has maybe zero too little flaws. Maybe this is a hot take, but it's a hot take I'm willing to stand behind for a very specific reason. I think let's pretend, and I know they announced it, they had that trailer where the Silurian mask appeared at the end. So people were kind of like, I think the Silurians are coming back. I don't know how much they were like making that clear. But I was thinking a lot about the episode Rise of the Cyberman, the Cyberman 2-parter season 2. So everyone knew the Cybermen were coming. It's an episode that spends the whole time building up to the Cybermen. But that one feels so plotting because it is literally called Rise of the Cybermen. And the whole time you're like, where are the fucking Cybermen? Just give us the Cybermen. Come on. The first set part of this, The Hungry Earth, is so good about doling out information and slowly building up tension. It actually provides some very scary scenes. I think the moment when Amy wakes up inside the pod kind of fucked me up a little bit. The moment when the Ambrose goes after her son and you just see the POV shot bearing down on her as she screams, I think that worked. I think this is an episode that really uses the supporting cast to its advantage. I also think that it's basically the close, like, Doctor Who does Alien, the movie Alien, is a genre in and of itself. You could run a film festival just on New Who episodes that are doing Alien. You know, you'd have Last Christmas. I can't think of another one. That's the most obvious one. But you know what I'm talking about. Yeah. Like, almost every season they have an episode where you're like, oh, it's Alien. I mean, wait, I'm just talking about Base Under Siege. In a way, Alien was the first Base Under Siege movie. But this is the first one where it really felt like they were using the most out of the genre, as opposed to what I think most Base Under Siege stories feel like, which is, you know, let's go to this location. Let's go to this other location. Let's go to this other location. And this one really felt like, to me, it really felt like, oh, this is like, there's actual work and development being put here, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I will say the Doctor Who Expanded Wiki does not consider this a Base Under Siege story, which I would agree, even though, because it's maybe a Base Under Siege story for like 5 minutes when there's that, 10 minutes when there's that bubble around.
Mm-hmm, the Fortnite bubble.
Yeah. But I think it really just kind of worked for me. I was just watching and I was like, I'm hooked in. I'm interested. I'm fascinating. I like this. It's going well. Why don't I remember this episode being this good? And then one thing happens that I think drags this two-parted down, which is they take off their masks. I think the Silurian redesign, there's been a lot of conversation about it. And I've never had to think about it because I never saw the original. But when I first saw this one, this is what just the Silurians looked like, you know? It's not like the Centaurans where they got a redesign of the redesign. And then I could, by then I could look back and say, okay, this is what they used to look like. Oh, I like how they look like this now. But, you know, I think they are so threatening when they have their masks on that when they take their masks off and it makes them so human, it almost saps a little bit of their threat. And it kind of signals what I think is a big problem with this episode, which is that the second half is just really boring. The second half introduces like four more characters. It goes from like making you care about these characters to now it's like the stakes are so big. You know, it used to be that I was noticing that the stakes in the first one are just, there's these people, they're getting sucked into the earth. What's going on? Those are the stakes. And then the stakes on the second one is like, we need to form like a fucking new constitution for mankind. And it's like, we know that this is not going to happen in an episode. It's so weird to me because I think the first episode is a great example of like using the extended runtime of a two-parter to really like give everyone like a little moment. I think they had that little moment with the Doctor and Elliot is good. The little moment with the Doctor and Tony is good. I think, I apologize if I said this wrong, but Mira Sile is probably in my top 10 list of I wish she was a companion. Just she has so much chemistry with Eleven, particularly to the point that I'm kind of thinking like when I was watching, I was like, why did they never give him a companion that's older than him? Because that kind of would work really, really well, right? Like he's an old man pretending to be a kid and to have an old person. Not that Mira is old. I think she was 50 when she shot this episode. But compared to Matt Smith, she's twice his age. It really works. And I think there's so much that works in this episode because they have the extended runtime. And then they just kind of throw all that aside so they could do that very boring, you know, let's all sit down and have a conversation about this.
Mm-hmm.
Which feels like the plotting, slow-paced thing you think it's going to be. And as a result, it kind of drags the entire two-parter down. Like I told you, I said, I posted on the on our chat, I said, what did I say? I'm going to read exactly what I said. I'm halfway through the Silurian two. Hold on, let me find it exactly. Sorry, hold on. I'm only halfway through the Silurian two-parter, but I got to give it to Chris. This is a good episode. And then the instant the second episode starts, I went, oh no. Oh.
When they said the Earth, and the guy's like, the dawn of man.
Yeah, when you got the narration, I was like, oh no, guys, this is not good. This is not good.
Mm-hmm.
You fucked it up.
You fucked up. That main elder guy reminds me so much of Dr. Kelso from Scropes. So I can't take it seriously because I just see like...
Why is there the narration? I read up that they added this later. This was not in the original, like when they were shooting it, they added Moffat added this later. Why? Unnecessary, and also it spoils the fucking plot of the episode. From the start, he says, and this is the story of how he stopped a war, but lost a lot of things in the way. So the whole time, you're not really interested in the war because you know he's going to stop it. You're interested in, like, what losses is he going to suffer? Which I think is such a a misfire personally, because you're really just expecting something else to happen, and that, and it only happens in the last 5 minutes.
Stop right there. I'll use my very deadly weapon again. And one warning, that's all you get. If there can be no deal, you go back into hibernation. All of you. Now. This ends here.
No!
And I put forward a theory that I've been building. And it tracks back to like when we started doing this. The first time a future showrunner gets a two-parter, you see the rhythms of how their era is going to work. Mm-hmm. So with, and even worse, like with Russell, like Russell's first two-parter, you know, you get the alien threat, but it gets grounded in, like, you know, real world stuff. You get like the family dynamic, you get all this stuff, right, with, like, you know, UNIT and everything. Enter Child Dr. Dan says, you get, like, you know, the way, and I said this before, the way Eccleston's written in that is very like Matt Smith 11 kind of stuff. You get like the you know, the emotional ending of, like, you know, love's gonna win this one, no one's gonna die. You get all this kind of, you know, creepy stuff. You get, it's like it's not so much a fairy tale, but it's kind of fairy tale-ish. This one you get, and I'm not trying to be derogatory towards him, you get the weird things that happen in Chibnall's era, where like a character does something that completely random out of nowhere, and you get a rushed kind of conclusion. For example, I really don't understand. Like, I understand the impetus behind Nazarene staying behind at the end, but that happens so like out of nowhere, where she's just like, "I'm staying here, by the way, because I'm going to go to sleep with Jonah from Torchwood."
Which, by the way, when I realized, I went, wow, talk about a glow up. But also, exactly, it's like that whole sequence at the end, they're always going 5 minutes, 6 minutes, 4 minutes, we gotta go. It's like, guys, hold on, stop, please calm down. You're dumping so much information on our heads, and you're like trying to rush over it so much. And it really, and I understand that. I think there was I read a quote by Chibnall being like, I wanted each section, each part of the two-parter to feel different. So he made the first part good and the second part not. But that's kind of what it feels like. It felt like they wanted to do like a genre shift, which I understand. But also, I think the best two-parters for Doctor Who, in my opinion, are the ones that like continue and elevate the themes of the first one. You know, it's kind of like, it is kind of like a sequel in like a movie sense, because, mm-hmm, you know, the first part of a two-parter is like the first movie, so it's setting up a lot of stuff. And then there's a sequel where it's just like, all right, now that we set everything up, let's go nuts, you know? So now we can like go really do a lot of stuff. And it really feels so clashing. And the second part feels so boring that I'm like, ugh. And you know what? I think it's telling that there's only been one two-part episode in the entirety of Chibnall's run. Because if Hungry Earth ended with, you know, if they added like a 5-minute scene at the end of Earth.
There's two.
Just to wrap it up. What?
There's two. In series 12 has two parters.
Oh, I'm sorry. That was so scary, David. The way you said that was so terrifying. I thought I was being haunted in real life. I looked over my shoulder and I was like, what the fuck? Anyway, I think if you added like a 5-minute ending to The Hungry Earth where it's like, it's the random tribe of Silurians, you know? Mm-hmm. And they're the evil enemies, but we figure out a solution, and now the episode's over. I think people would be like, this is one of the best episodes of the series, and of maybe Smith's entire run, because he's just like firing on cylinders here. He's firing on cylinders in the first episode. Rory's firing on cylinders on the first episode. Amy's firing on cylinders in the first episode. Everyone is just like, bang, bang, bang. The supporting cast is doing good. The monster actors are doing good. I didn't hate the kid, which is so rare. But then the second part is like, and now politics, which is like, we know this is not going to get fixed. Mm-hmm. Stop trying to get us to get invested into, will they find a solution that works for both races, when we know they won't. Because the next episode isn't called Silurians and Humans Together Again. And it feels so good.
Yeah, I think what's interesting about the human cast is that even though it's like, you know, at its core, it's just like it's four people, but like the main focus is, you know, like I'm forgetting her name, but the woman in this and I'm gonna like look up her name because I can't make a point that I can't be like she did this and she did that. Hungry Earth. More like Hungry Google. Sorry, yeah. I actually looked up Hungry Earth.
Also, it really does feel like this episode is the last vestiges of RTD going away. I think we talk about in the next episode how Vincent and the Doctor feels like Moffat reaching, okay, this is what my Doctor Who looks like. And this feels like the end of RTD's era because there's still some both visual and structural clues and ideas that he would put in his episodes. Like, okay, it's a little town. It's like people. There's a lot of focus on how people react and all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And then towards the end, you start getting into that crack in the universe stuff. And then you get into the real, like, fucking timey-wimey shit Moffat loves. Which, to be honest, it's a time travel show. You should get timey-wimey shit, you know?
Mm-hmm. I checked your name now. So, I mean, like, the human cast of this, you have, like, you know, that's called Charlie Rose. Like, you have the kid, and you have Ambrose, and you have all these characters. But, like, you know, you have the dynamic they built up with the human characters, I think, is so interesting when it's like such a limited cast as well. Because, like, you only see, like, you know, the four of them. I guess you see the dad as well, but not until the second episode, really. But I think their dynamic is so interesting. The way Ambrose is played, I believe the actress is Nia Roberts. The way like Ambrose kind of shifts through the episode, like you're waiting for this like big, you know, moment where she goes like, "Oh, I was so wrong to do this," or you know, "Oh, you know, I'm gonna have to sacrifice myself to make up for this." Whereas the ending you get is like the Doctor being like, you know, you're a piece of shit. You got to make sure your son is better than you'll ever be because you'll never be good enough.
I really like that. I don't know if you're gonna say you liked it.
I think it's a really, really good move on the on like Chibnall's part to be like, you know, she doesn't get redeemed. She doesn't seem like she needs. She doesn't. The character itself doesn't seem like she wants to be redeemed. She thinks she's still like, you know, I did the right thing. It's such a good like reflection of like, you know, how he builds up the Silurian, you know, pushback stuff.
But also it's very important to me that she's not portrayed as like a Stephen King evil character. It's like, I was just waiting for the first sign to turn into a fucking monster, you know? But also it's not that she does something bad, and it's not framed as like this was an accident, but it's also not framed as like this is something where someone is so far gone. It's framed as an honest to God, you know, choice made at like a moment of pressure. And I really appreciate that. The scene where she kills the Silurian is the best scene of the second part because it's playing out the themes from the first one instead of being like politics. So that the way it ends, that the Doctor is like, you know what, I'm not gonna like fucking go oncoming storm on you, you know, for no reason. But also that the Doctor's also like, yeah, but don't mistake this for saying that you're okay. It's like you have committed a mistake and now let's learn from it. And I think that's such a like a fascinating message to give in an episode about basically like trying to find common ground between two wildly different people. They're like, yeah, sometimes people are going to make mistakes. And when they do, those mistakes can't be used as an excuse to go, well, this can never work. Oh, this is proof that this can never work. But also, you know, we should use those mistakes as like a fucking, you know, like guiding principle. Like, let's not never do this again. And I think that's why that part with Ambrose is the best part of the entire episode. Of the second part of this episode. Mm-hmm. It sucks that it's not what this episode is about. Mm-hmm. Well, from the instant that they introduce the other Silurian, who's like, "Yeah, you can't kill everyone. I'm the real leader here. Let's have a pleasant discussion about this." And it's like I appreciate they're not doing the fucking like our enemy is a war hungry person who's never going to listen to reason. But I wish they didn't do this though. It's like it was so interesting, and then they just went. And forget about that. Let's talk politics. Mm-hmm. And listen, I love politics. I love politics. I think this is a thing that, you know, I think when you compare this to an upcoming episode, like, what was it called? The Zygon two-parter. Mm-hmm. What's the name?
Zygon Invasion.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. The reason why that, I mean, I hate how much people post that final scene mm-hmm. with 12 and the two boxes and all that. But the reason that scene fits within the episode is because that's what the episode is about from the start. It is about, like, these two people trying to live together. It's not like the first episode is like, and maybe I'm wrong and I need to rewatch it, which I haven't done in such a long time. But it really feels like it's not like the first part is like, okay, here's like we're doing the thing, and then it turns into like a politics episode.
You could have let those things shoot me. You saved me.
An eye for an eye. It's never the way. Now you show your son how wrong you were. Now there's another way. You make him the best of humanity. In the way you couldn't be.
I have a question for you mm-hmm. that I want to get into. Do you think they turn the Silurians into the Klingons?
I don't, but I think what they do is it's kind of interesting how the only time they ever really utilize them after this is you get that one bit in, well, you get first of all in Good Mangos where you get Vastra, and Vastra's like the overriding legacy of like this whole thing. It's the same actress as Alea. Neve McIntosh. And like she becomes like the face of Silurians. But like as of that, it's like that one moment in Good Mangos to War with like there's like an army of them that come with all of them. And then that bit in Dinosaurs on a Spaceship where I think Bob Keltz reprises his role as the, like, as one, like, not like reprises his role, but like he plays the same kind of role in Dinosaurs on a Spaceship for like 5 minutes. And then after that, they're just gone. There's like, you get like the Sea Devils in like series 9, getting the right. Legend. And then there's like no other, like, you know, it's interesting. I think they I think at some point the idea of, you know, I don't know, there's at some point the idea of doing stories like this, I think, kind of would kind of fade away from like the show's creative forefront, which is kind of interesting. Kind of, you know, there's like a gradual like pull away from doing this kind of thing. But when they do
what do you mean by this kind of thing?
Like this kind of story of like, you know, these like humans and this other kind of group are warring, tries to find peace between them. There's like going forward, like it's usually stuff like, you know, Smile, where it's like the emoji bots versus, or the AI versus like the humans, or like, you know, the Zygon two-parter. But like outside that, it usually just descends into like, you know, two camps of humans fighting, which maybe was maybe like a financial thing, because it's easier to be like, you know, here are these people without any like prosthetics on, they're just like two normal actors, rather than like here's like, because the face mask stuff in this is clearly designed as like, you know, we got a
hug. It's like that stuff with the Jadoon where like there's only two Jadoons with their helmets off. Mm-hmm. That like that's fine. I disagree that I think it's a budget thing. I don't think it's a budget thing for a very simple reason, which is I think the reason they stopped doing it is because it's just, well,
I mean, I wouldn't say it's solely a budget thing, but I think I think just the style of story is kind of, I don't want to say hard to do these days, but I think there's an element of like, we've played out the story so many times at this point. Yes. There's nothing really to add to like this kind of approach that isn't, you know,
There is that where it's, you know, I think audiences have become much more aware of both the positive and negative stereotypes that stories about humans and aliens try to make peace can play into. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, the Zygon, I remember there was a lot of conversation about the Zygon two-parter being about immigration. And I can see how somebody looking at that be like, I don't want to deal with that shit right now. Mm-hmm. But I think what you're talking about is also a result of the fact that, you know, the show became much, much more about the Doctor than it used to be.
Mm-hmm.
In a sense of like, I don't think it's an inherently bad thing, but whenever I watch Classic Who, I'm almost always like surprised by how much the Doctor is kind of like, he's not the main thing, right? He's mm-hmm. like, he's a wanderer. He wanders in and he interacts with his eclectic cast of characters and he like gives ideas. In a way, what Eleven is doing in the second part, where he kind of disappears for a while, is very Classic Who-ish. But over the course of the revived series, the show went from being about like the situations to being about the companions. You know, that was kind of like the plot lines of every season are about the companions. And I think this is the last one, right? I mean, if you think about it, series one is about Rose and Bad Wolf. Series two is about, you know, stuff is coming for Rose, and it's still about Rose. Sure, it is about how 10 feels about Rose, but Rose is the instigating thing. Series three is the first one that is like this, about the Master and his relationship with the Doctor, to the point that Martha Jones kind of takes a backside. And then series four is also very much about Donna. Series 5 is kind of about Amy, but it is starting to be more about the Doctor. And then you get to Series 6, where it's the Doctor's death. Series 7, the Doctor's name. Series 8, is the Doctor a good person? Series 9, the Doctor is looking for the hybrid. Mm-hmm. Series 10, the Doctor and Missy. Series 11, the Doctor herself. It stops being about the people around the Doctor and the people, and it starts being more about the Doctor. But the thing about that is that the Doctor can't take a side because the Doctor, by definition, is not human or a specific alien. And it would be so against their character for them to take a side. And so I think it's so much harder to come up with those situations where the Doctor is like put into a moderator position. And I think that the writers have just understood that like when they do that, the Doctor becomes very secondary, and that's no longer what the show is about. Like, mm-hmm. unfortunately, that's just not what the show is about. And I hope one day we get to see another episode like this. But I feel like now that the series are like 8 episodes long, you just don't have enough time to have an episode that's about like the Doctor like helps these two people come together, you know? Like, mm-hmm. I think that's going to be the first casualty. And unfortunately, like, this is one of the last ones. It's this and then Zygons and then that's it. Like, I'm trying to think of any other ones. 13 has no moderator episodes.
No. Smile is the closest thing because it's the AI starts building their plan up, and then the humans want to fight the AI and stuff. And then,
but Smile is not framed as a moderator episode. And I like this term I just came up with, moderator episode.
Mm-hmm.
I think Smile is kind of like Arachnids in the UK, where you start off thinking it's like this is a monster, and then it turns into a moderator episode or Demons in the Punjab. But like, I think like the last straight up moderator episode is Zygon. It's an episode where it's like the Doctor's alienness has made him into an impartial party in this story.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And I think a lot of listeners might be angry at me because I have not seen a lot of Classic Who. I have not seen as much as I wish I have. But I also feel like, you know, that's kind of where the show is going. As the Doctor becomes a much more of an active character, you know, you kind of lose stories where all they do is moderate.
Be a anyway. Moderator as well.
Yeah.
Yeah,
the doctor would be a moderator. Mm-hmm. I think the reason I brought up if you think the Silurians got turned into the Klingons, because you know, we're running out of like classic monsters to be redesigned and brought back. You know, it felt like so exciting when the Sea Devils did it. And I remember thinking like, fuck, it's been like 4 years since we've had like a classic Who monster come back, right? Mm-hmm. Like, it has the War of the Centaurans also felt very refreshing, but the Centaurans have been around for a while now. So I was thinking, like, is there anyone even left? And don't say the Ronnie. but is there anyone even left?
I just looked up Ted. I looked up like classic Who Doctor Who monsters should come back. Do you want me to look at the list from Game Rant? Or there's Walk Culture, the two of them, for some reason.
Just go Game Rant. I'm feeling particularly gamey and ranty.
Gamer Ant. Speaking of gamer, that kid should have AirPods. If it's 2020, he shouldn't be using.
Yeah, the kid is like, I need to go get my headphones. And it's like, it's 2020. You have a Bluetooth speaker you turn on in the bus. Come on.
And everyone's like, can you shut the fucking Gruffalo audiobook up, please? Okay, so there's the Wirin, who are from the Ark in Space.
Is a fucking bug. Stop.
The Wirin would be your classic alien kind of story, because Ark in Space is literally just alien. If we thought the bug was bad, number six is the Crinoids, who are galactic weeds, of course. The Crinoid, I actually had an idea for before, but I don't know. The Axons, who would be interesting if we're doing a story about, like, you know, renewable energy, but like otherwise it's kind of just like, I don't know. The Rootin Tootins are not coming back. I'm sorry, they're not
coming back. Finish. They belong in Big Finish. Well, isn't Big Finish being a fucking entire Big like Finish, Rootons yeah. versus Centaurans?
They just announced this going to date, but they just announced the
I love that.
Yeah, it's just
so much.
It's just gonna, and they redesigned the Rootin for the series. I think it's a series 17.
It's an audio series.
No, the Blu-ray box set for series 17 or 18, whichever the recent one is with Tom Baker. They redesigned the Rootins for like the CG for horror fan rock, and then they changed the box art on like the design on like the Blu-ray box set is the new design. Rather than the old design, which I'm a bit, I don't know. The Rastan Warrior robot from Five Doctors, people want that to come back because I had one scene that was good in it. There's no real.
Oh, I fucking love. The Rastan is that the one scene, that, like,
yeah.
I go, love that guy. Bring him back.
Good. But no, but it's a good scene, but, like, there's nothing that you can really do there because it's just a robot. It's a robot that jumps up and down and shoots things.
Well, but we need weird robots. Robots stop being weird. Do you notice that? Robots used to be weird. Robots no longer are weird.
Just humans now go, like, I'm a robot. No, this will tell you how old this list is. Number two is the Sea Devils.
Well, we are getting that spinoff.
I just so excited for this.
This is the thing I love. I mean, can you imagine fucking Kathleen Kennedy coming out and saying, our next big project is Star Wars. Complete history of jizz music. Like, that's kind of like Doctor Who is about. And the thing is, imagine that happening and everyone going, hell yeah, jizz music.
There's a chance, though, I'll get to number one in this in a second. It's a chance that series will be a moderator-style thing because it sounds like it's going to be, like, humans versus sea devils for, like, some kind of...
Oh, hell yeah. Thing. Let's do it. Let's fucking do it, man.
Number one...
Bring moderator Laka back. Who?
Number one are... And I'm... You think maybe like Omega, or it'd be like, you know, the Rani or the Black Guardian. Number one are the Sensorites, which is like,
what? You are kidding me.
The reason they give seems to be because they are connected to the Ood. They should come back. I'm gonna look at the Walk Culture.
No. If you know who should come back, the Tribe of Zah should come back. When what happened? Monsters used to be just cavemen, and now they gotta be fucking Neil Patrick Harris and shit.
You'll be woke cavemen now.
Really woke. I really wish, you know, I don't think they're ever gonna do it, but I really wish they did. God, I wish they did this one day. I wish they had like an episode where, you know, like, imagine Shuti is like, oh, we're facing off against the Weeping Angels again. But wait, this reminds me of the time I faced off against them in the 70s. And then it fades into, they re-edit John Pertwee footage to face off against the Weeping Angels. But it's the Weeping Angels as if they were done in the 70s. So it's fairly clearly just somebody in like a bodysuit. I really wish they would do that. That would be so much fun. Because like I have this, I mean, I read this once, that the reason the early series are in black and white is because the first Doctor was colorblind or something. I love that shit. But I have this internal theory that the reason everything looked so crappy before 2005 is because that's just how things looked back then in the universe. They just looked like shit. Mm-hmm. And I really want them to have an episode where they're like, well, that looks like a guy in a suit. And it's like, yeah, well, that's how everything used to look back then. Mm-hmm. They all looked like guys in suits, but they still killed you.
Mm-hmm. Can I tell you something that I realized watching this? They should do a Bigfoot episode. Where there's like a Sasquatch or something.
You should do
like
a Bigfoot episode.
Do a cryptid, like a cryptid episode with like the Sea Devils or like the Silurians would go hard, I think, you know?
Here's the thing. Everyone is super afraid of what the Disney purchase means. We still haven't fully grasped. I think we've only seen one effect of the Disney purchase, which is them adding that scene of the 15th Doctor into the start of Ruby Sunday. So that the Trish on Ruby Road, so that he doesn't take too long for him to show up. I think that's maybe the first thing we've seen that Disney is like, you should do this. Mm-hmm. But still RTD said, yeah, I'll do it. Anyway, I really wish, because if you're gonna fuck it up, have 15 meet the Muppets. Just do it. Just like, you can finally do shit like that. Just have the Muppets show up. And have them be, I mean, isn't there a story where the third Doctor faces off against kind of like the Muppets? Like fake Muppets?
Yeah, it's like I think it's a companion chronicle with Joe Grant or something that they I haven't listened to it, but I think that it is
right.
A thing. They should do, what they should really do is, this is like a big Gagsbrain thing. Kingdom Hearts 4 should have a Doctor Who level, and Goofy should be like,
yes,
Gorsh, he's regenerating, and then Donald Duck's like, yeah, I can't do Donald Duck. Donald Duck's just like, yeah, look at them go. So you fight Dabs with a keyblade, it writes itself.
I figured you could say, I thought you were going to say like, Riku, don't blink!
Mm-hmm.
For sure, the Weeping Angels are very dangerous.
Yes, Donald Duck.
Jesus Christ, David. Oh my God.
I'm Donald Duck. Hello.
Is that Donald Duck being choked to death?
I've had a lot of hardship recently. I sound like more like Danny DeVito than Donald Duck.
I don't know. Yeah, I don't know. It's. They should bring back, it's actually interesting because in a couple of weeks there's an episode where they almost brought back a classic monster and then decided against it at the last moment because that would be too silly. But they should bring back, like, I've always been the opinion they should bring back, like, you know, one that, like, isn't, like, famous. Because, like, they bring back the Movellans for, like, 2 seconds in the pilot as, like, a kind of a...
Like, you mean, like, Alpha Centauri?
Yeah, or like, well, Alpha Centauri does come back at some point.
Well, for like 2 seconds in the episode, Mars.
Yeah, because it like just like do like, you know, bring back the Zarbi, or bring back like
you're the Master. I haven't seen him in a while. What's he doing?
he's in the tooth. I remember the
I remember.
I remember the big rumor for. Series 11 was going to be like the great vampires from State of Decay are back, and it's a big fight between the Doctor and the great vampires for control of the universe, and then it obviously didn't happen. I don't know.
I feel like there's been the dearth of like fucking recurring new monsters, because it really feels like every monster they come up with is like either. There's no way this fuck is so good, but there's no way this fucker is ever gonna come back, or boring as shit. I mean, what is the last new monster that keeps coming back? It's the Weeping Angels, right?
Well, yeah, I guess like if you count like, I mean, this okay, Weeping Angels have two part of this time. Then they have like they're the only new ones that like last across three showrunners. Like the Patine, like I don't know if you count like inter Shuren or stuff. The Patin get two appearances.
The Patin should come back.
The Patin should come back and just eat metal. And the Silence are in Revolution of the Daleks for like 2 seconds, as are the Sycorax. Yeah, I don't know. I think the problem is that, like they invent new monsters that like seem like they could be iconic, and then they just don't have enough time to bring them back. Mm-hmm. Or they do like the monk thing where like it's like a dedicated trilogy of like three stories where like these guys are just hanging out, and then like they kind of
the monk have big let's roll out the red carpet for the new iconic Looney Tunes characters energy.
Mm-hmm. No one has ever thought about the monks since like 2017. Like no, it's not happening. What is happening is that in this one, there is a Silurian scientist who, at the start of the episode, is like, "I love dissecting," and then halfway through, is like, "We're not we can't be monsters. We can't dissect them anymore." And I was like, "What the fuck are you talking about?" Like you spent like the last, like the opening, like the introduction to that one guy, that one like Silurian head doctor is. Like the actor is like, you know, he's going all like kind of crazy, kind of weirdo, creepy kind of thing, and then like he does complete 180 for the rest of the episode. It's pretty strange,
right? It's like, I'm sorry, I look creepy. Mm-hmm. That was I forgot to turn off my creepy button.
Mm, it's just weird. It's a weird turn.
I'm the last of my species.
Really? No, last of the species, the Klempari defense. As an interrogation defense, it's a bit old hat, I'm afraid.
I'm the last of my species.
No, you're really not. Because I'm the last of my species, and I know how it sits in a heart. So don't insult me. Let's start again.
What I want to talk about is, like, the crack and the revelations of the crack. Because I remember watching...
Right, okay, yeah, that's another thing where it's like there's 5 minutes left and then suddenly the crack comes in.
The crack's the giant... It's big this time. It's turned big. And he puts his hand... the whole thing of like, you know, it's called the explosion. I'm going to put my hand in and pull the debris out. Is a bit... I don't know. It's an interesting reveal, and it's a real, like, you know, at the time I remember it being like an oh my god kind of reveal. But like... I don't know.
But it's, now it feels...
It feels a bit like sudden. Weird? To be like, it feels a bit sudden to be like, you know, oh, it's an explosion. Oh, okay. Oh, it's a piece of the TARDIS. We're going to explore this again in like 3 weeks. We'll have a look at this. I don't know. It's a bit... I don't know. But like the death of what's that guy?
I don't remember.
I don't know what I'm saying. That whole thing is, you know, it when you kill them off like the week before, like twice, it's kind of a bit like, you know, it's a bit soon to kill them off again. Especially when, you know, he does come back. But like, I think.
Are you talking about the Ronnie?
Yeah, the thing is, like, and we kind of heard it before, the ending is so abrupt. Like, there's so, like, it's just like boom, 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 boom. That, like, it just, like, there's no time for anything to land fully because it's just like, you know,
yes,
I'm still recovering from this reveal. Why are you doing this? And why are you doing this? And oh no, the Silurians crawled out from underneath the corner and she shot him. Oh no, that whole thing is like, come on. I don't know. It's just, it's, I think it drops the ball at the end, but like, I think the problem that it has is what we talked about before, where, you know, it changes lanes for the second part and doesn't really land fully. But like, I don't know. It's the Silurians. What can you say? You know, you can't say anything because it's just Silurians.
I will say my opinion of Rory's death is. It did lead me to ask a question in the chat to everyone, which was, do we think Moffat planned this all out? Because in retrospect, it does feel like, and now another part of the plan has fallen into place with him pulling out the thing from inside and Rory disappearing. But in the moment to moment, not only did he feel rushed, but also it felt very underwhelming. You know, it's like we've spent this whole episode. It's like, and then never mind about that whole stuff about uniting Silurians. Now we've got to run for the toxic fumigation, and never mind all that stuff. And now Rory's disappearing, and it's like, oh my god, you guys, like, calm down, please. You gotta, like, chill a little bit. And it feels very, we gotta do this. I remember thinking the moment-to-moment stuff in the actual, like, watching of it felt very much like, this is not fully working for me, but I'm looking back at it, I'm like, yeah, this is kind of cool, actually. I kind of like it. I don't know. It's hard to explain.
Yeah, I don't know. The hungry earth, and the cold blood.
And this is only going to be, I'm going to mention this now, but we should only probably talk about this later. Why aren't there more Lone Centurion box sets? I think this is such a give Rory more shit, please. Mm-hmm. I like those. They're fun. They're really interesting. It's a little cool thing.
I don't know. I assume it's him being too busy, or them being like, you know.
With what?
Life. I don't know. Like,
I guess he is a human being.
It's either that, or they just didn't sell well enough for them to be like, you know, we'll do a third one.
Just Nick Briggs bringing him in, like, I am so sorry. We gotta do this Ruitens versus Tarns. The people just want it so much.
The people just want this one where they're on the Giant's Causeway so much. Even though it has Karras in it, but, like, you know, it's got Karras, but it's also like, you know, to what end? And that end is Rutans going around the place.
Yes.
But yeah, I don't know. I've nothing else to say, really. Other than, you know, don't get swallowed up with the ground. Don't get dissected. And I don't know. Don't be like Tony Mac and get hit by poison and then have to go to sleep for like 20,000 years.
Do you want to know where Arthur Darvill is right now? It is actually going to shock you. Yeah, I wish. It might actually shock you. Do you want to know where he is?
Where is he?
He is performing on Once in Beijing.
Beijing. I knew he was in the Once musical, but like I didn't know it was there. His whole thing post this has been like, you know, he'll pop up in like, you know, Broadchurch or Legends of Tomorrow. But he's also like been doing like a lot of quiet, like, you know, stuff like the Once musical. It's, I don't know, he's got an interesting career. The three, he's the one, like, he obviously didn't really pop as much as, like, you know, the other two did. And maybe that suits him. Maybe he's like holding things like, I just want to have a quiet, like, you know, quiet career. But it's, I don't know. What I do know is, I think this is the end. So,
did we really talk for an hour about this episode? Holy shit. We did.
I'm getting sucked into the earth. Bye.
Next time on Pod Tour, who cast?
To me, Van Gogh is the finest painter in the world.
Look there, the window of the church.
Is that a face?
Yes, and not a nice face at all.
We need to talk to Vincent Van Gogh.
Thank you, Anki!
There's so much more to the world than the average eyes allow to see.
Who could have done this?
The eyes are now seeing.
If we're not careful, the net result of our present little trip will be the brutal murder of the greatest artist who ever lived.
Can you breathe a little quieter, please?
No.
I know how it will end.
Doctor!
Amy!
No, no, no!
It will not end well.